I remember being a kid and, you know, thinking, why aren't I doing that? You know, I deserve that. And as a kid, you don't really think about why brands sponsor you, you know, and at the end of the day, they sponsor you to sell more product.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Basics Podcast. Today, we get to sit down and talk it out with the big homie, Sam Light, who is a pro kiteboarder from the UK. Super cool dude, super smart when it comes to business as far as being a pro athlete, and he's also a really good competitor. He's been able to be one of the top tier park riders for many years. If you have no idea what park riding is, I recommend checking out the Triple S Invitational. There's lots of content about it, but basically it's a kiteboarding event where the focus is on hitting rails, kickers, and other obstacles. Super cool side of the sport, super strong, kind of semi-underground, but been exploding over the years. Discipline. And yeah, we just kind of dive into a bit of Sam's story, figure out how he's been able to get sponsors, figure out how he got into kiting, and just kind of dive into a bit more of his story as far as being a pro athlete over the past 15 years. So yeah, super cool episode. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. Let's jump into the episode. Wah.
1, 3, 5, go!
Coming from the wild, wild West Indies.
So what's up, man?
Hey, Jake. Good to see you. Always a pleasure to see you in England. How's things?
All good, man. It's been a while.
Yeah, I know. Too long.
Yeah.
You don't leave your island these days, man. What's
I know,
going
right?
On?
It's too good, man. It's too good. It's hard to leave.
Yeah, fair enough. That's true.
So yeah, man, usually I kind of like to start it off by just kind of going into your backstory a little bit for, like, you know, the one kiteboarder who might not know who Sam Light is. You know, how did you get into kiting and, you know, how did all that start?
Cool. Good question. So I learned to kite when I was 13, which is... looking at about 15 years ago now, which is pretty crazy, yeah. Just down the road at a place called Haining Island. It's one of the best spots in the UK, actually, which is how I came to try it. I had a cousin that was a couple of years older than me and helped me learn. And back then it was all pretty sketchy, you know?
Yeah.
So, after a few little accidents, got the swing of things and then... kind of just always did it for fun and then left school and it was a means to travel and then it went from one thing to the next and still doing it.
Yeah, still doing it.
It was a short compressed version. But
that's cool, man. But like, yeah. So, you know, you started at 13 and then, you know, obviously you did it for many years. And then what was the big like breakthrough moment? When did you go from like just a kid shredding to like, okay, now I can travel, now I can do this? You know, what was that process like?
There was kind of one moment that I really broke through from being a national rider to international rider. But basically from, my younger years, I would compete in the UK tour. We used to have a really good UK tour back in the day with 5 or 6 or even 7 competitions some years. So that was a really good way of, you know, like building on my basics and learning about competition and stuff and the industry and, you know, even managing sponsors and stuff back then. And then... actually, a similar time as I was finishing school, I heard about this project called the Nash House, and where they rented a big house in Maui when I was sponsored by Nash, and they had like 14 European riders going.
Okay.
And I wasn't on the list, and I was like, damn, I've got to go, you know. So I ended up just, you know, getting some money together, paying for myself to go, and just working my ass off that week and then, you know, just asking them like constantly, you know, what can I do to keep this up? I actually, asked the brand manager, was like, look, between me and you, if you paid for yourself to come back for the photo shoot, you know, Robbie's probably going to reimburse you. You know, you're a good kid and you work hard and you know what's up. So sure enough, I did that. And then it kind of really got me in and then went to the first photo shoot. And then once you do a photo shoot, they use you for all the marketing like worldwide. Mm-hmm. So start getting a couple of ads and you become more well-known internationally rather than just nationally.
Mm-hmm.
That was the real breakthrough for me going international. And then, start each year you build on, get a little bit more kites, a bit more money, and it gives you that, you know, a bit more budget for the next trip. At the start, I just, you know, put everything back in. Just save up just for the next trip type thing. And then as it goes on, you know, more people want you to go to competitions and trips and it goes from one thing to the next. So
yeah, super cool, man. So that one moment was like the game changer, basically you just going forward and making it kind of happen, it sounds like.
Yeah, kind of. Like it definitely, it doesn't come, you got to work for it and you got to work hard for it. And then, if you chase up any opportunity, you know, that you might have. I once heard this really cool quote. which I actually
probably can't remember now, but
it's gonna come back to me in a sec. Wait, no, it's shit. Wait, give me a minute. It's gonna come back to me. All right, it's a good quote.
We'll time it. Minute. We'll just, you know.
I might have to look it up quickly. No, go on. Carry on. And I'm gonna look.
Oh, cool, man. So this kind of rolls into like the next question. What business advice would you give to like an up and coming writer who's, you know, kind of in the game, wants to go pro? Like, how does he figure that out? Because like, remember last time I was in the UK and we hung out for like a month?
Yeah.
I actually learned a lot from you, just understanding how brands work and making a portfolio and like just getting better at selling your ideas and selling what you've done and what you want to do. Like that month for me, hanging out with you, I like grew as a business individual.
Cool.
So that was many years ago. So I'm sure now you probably even like, you know, have learned a lot since then.
Yeah.
So what are some like, just a few things that, you know, maybe there's a young kid watching or listening and he wants to like go pro. Like, what are some stuff he can think about or try and do to, you
for
know,
sure.
go for it?
I remember being a kid and, you know, thinking, why aren't I doing that? You know, I deserve that. And as a kid, you don't really think about why brands sponsor you, you know, and at the end of the day, they sponsor you to sell more product, not because you can do a back mode five or, you know, a blind judge five, whatever. And when, you know, when you're that age and you've been doing it for that long, that's all you really care about is like, wait, I can do these tricks that this guy's doing on this video.
Mm-hmm.
I should be getting paid too, you know, and it doesn't always work like that. So I think it's really important to always be able to quantify your worth, you know. And it doesn't, you can start small with social media nowadays. You can do so much off your own back, you know, you can use your phone camera and make videos and stuff like that. So yeah, at the start, I would say the best thing to do is be able to quantify your worth, no matter how big or little. So make a video, if it gets 500 views, then if you make 10 videos and they all get 500 views, then at the end of the year, you can say, look, I've got 5,000 views, you know. And then it all also starts with the local distributor as well, because they're the guys that are going to give the nod to the company to help you go to that next level, you know. Mm. So working with your local distributor, going to demos, you know, being on the ground, putting yourself out there as much as you can, really. But yeah, the portfolio thing was always really important. I'm amazed how few riders still don't do portfolios.
Really, like, yeah.
I still meet people that don't even do them, and I do one every year, and it just helps you look back and be like, okay, I've got, you know, this many pages in magazine, you know. Even if nobody knows who you are, you can still get a page in a magazine if you've got a picture and some questions, and there's always an idea you can go with, or, you know, you can do a article about your home spot or something. Something really
piece
easy
of content.
And I think you've got to really use what you have at your disposal. So, like, you've got it good because you live in the Caribbean. So every picture you take, every video you take looks awesome.
Yeah.
Because the watercolor, and it's all on your doorstep. But then the flip side is it's really hard for you to leave because it's super expensive. Yeah. You know? So there's always compromise. And for me, it's easier for me to travel because, you know, flying out of London is easier. And I've also got access to cable parks, which you don't have there, which is good to practice. But then on the flip side, it's basically, you know, really hard to shoot anything worthy here, you know. So
always give and take.
You got to figure out what you have and make the most of it.
Do that, man. That's pretty solid. So for the most part, just document what you're up to, you know, make a portfolio. Don't know what that is. Figure it out.
Yeah.
And just, you know, quantify everything you're doing. That's pretty solid.
And just, figure out what you have at your disposal and use it to the most you can.
Yeah. True that, man. Pretty solid. I'm going to be taking some notes when I go back home. So cool, man. I guess we can lead into the next question, which is kind of just about the state of kiteboarding, you know, because you're very, you know, as you say, you're traveling all the way in the UK, so you get to move around a lot. You're very in the scene, I would say. You know, what is the state of kiteboarding in your eyes? You know, how is the sport doing as far as, you know, because there's a lot of stuff been happening in the past few years, like, you know, a few big riders are changing sponsors, brands are changing their name, all sorts of kind of interesting stuff has happened in the past few years. The Kite Park League has been blowing up, a few other things have been blowing up. So, like, overall, what do you think's, like, the state of kiteboarding, is it doing good, is it?
Yeah, I think the state of kiteboarding's in a great place right now. I think it's still very much finding its feet. I think it's so diverse, you know, you've got so many disciplines. which I think is both the beauty of it and also its Achilles heel, you know, because it's so cool that we have all these different disciplines. You can go foiling, surfing, even within freestyle, we've got so many different disciplines, mm-hmm. which is amazing. But also at the same time, it makes it a little bit more fragmented, you know, which I think is why that the freestyle tour has struggled in years gone by, just because it's so subjective, you know, like who's to say freestyle should be park, should be big air, should be straps. So you have all these differences of opinions trying to come together to decide on one thing, which is such an open sport, you know, and when you're trying to make it closed environment, it's tricky. So it's in a really good place in the way that all these different disciplines are, you know, are being furthered and being like developed mm-hmm. naturally. And then, I think there's some really cool things like the foiling aspect, I think, has been huge. Everyone's excited about that. Yep. It's really cool to see how the foiling actually, I think, has impacted, like, not just kite surfing, but
the whole
water sports industry. Like, even sailing, you know? Like,
yeah, that's where it started, you know, sailing. And then, like, kiteboarding was like, oh, let's get a piece of that. And for me, it's been sick. Yeah. Like, foiling is insane. It's probably, like, my favorite thing, like, you know, discipline within kiting right now, because especially living somewhere like the Caribbean, you can just go roam around, ride in no wind, sorts of, like, new stuff that you could never do before, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Like, for me in my riding as well, I'm seeing the most progression in my riding foiling, just because it's so hard. Like, it's not easy. And, you know, I've been doing freestyle for a long time. So actually, I'm pretty hyped on foiling as well myself at the moment. Even like, it's funny, like you start trying to learn how to roll tack.
Yeah.
And you make one a session for like a year. And
the
then
little things,
And then the second year comes by and you start making a couple of sessions. And then now I'm starting to get them down a bit more consistently. So
nice.
Yeah, it's cool. I think the state of kiteboarding is in a good place right now. And I'm excited to see where it's going to go.
Yeah, cool, man. Good to hear, you know. Before we kind of move on, I kind of want to talk about the Kite Park League a little bit. Like, you know, for people who may not even know what that is, could you just kind of give us a rundown on what's happening?
Yeah, so with the Kite Park League, you know, we weren't trying to make a tour to take over the whole industry, you know, but we just wanted to start an organization and a group of riders that just sort of helps link our events together, because there's always been three or four park events every year consistently, the Triple S, the Hood River Jam. There's been other events in Russia, Australia, Europe. And we just found it was easier for the event organizers if we were able to provide them with, you know, judging format, event criteria, things like that. It makes their life easy and our life easier. So when we're going to events, we know what to expect. And it's easier for the event organizers to get everything ready to how we want to our standard, basically. So we just created it for the greater good, really. And it's natural. It is, you know, the riders directly competing in it are helping organize it all together. So, yeah, it's just a very authentic just organization that is just trying to develop, you know, do our own thing and develop our favorite side of the sport.
Yeah, and it seems like it's been going pretty well. Like, you know, over the past 2-3 years, maybe it's become more organized, it seems like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really helped just really refine the format and the criteria. Yeah. So in doing so, it's really pushed everyone's riding, you know.
Yeah, like level's insane now.
Yeah.
Super cool to see.
Yeah, the progression's come on a lot, actually. Yeah. And each event, we're like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe we should do it this way around, or have 4 hits or 3 hits, like just little tweaks make everything go so much better. And also it helps the event, you know, get it run quicker, earlier, sooner, get a result, you know, all the things they want. And then it goes even further to, like, helping organize the media and videos and things like that. So
yeah, it's cool, man. Yeah, it's super tight. Need to get one going in Antigua at some point. I've been thinking about that. It could be pretty cool, you know?
For sure. I mean, the criteria is 2 sliders and a kicker, and you're pretty much there, you know?
Cool, man. We'll have to make that happen.
Yeah, let's talk more about that.
Yeah. Man. So you've been kiting for how long now?
15 years.
15 years. So what keeps you stoked on kiting now? We touched on a little bit about foiling.
Yeah.
But like, you know, what makes you want to go for a session after 15 years of getting to do it, you know, almost every day?
Yeah. I think, I think, like I was saying earlier, it's the diversity of it, you know, it's always different. You know, I'll go on a trip somewhere and it'll be very different conditions to how it is back home. Like right now, it's like autumn, so we get some really cool storms, which is really fun, like big air kiteboarding, going out in, in gusty, strong wind in a thick wetsuit. Like, I love that part of it just as much as I love, like, you know, being somewhere nice and warm and cruising around on a foil. So I think that I'm lucky that I always mix it up, and I've stayed in touch with other disciplines too, such as like big air. So starting to come into big air season, really, for me, like, I kind of, like, you know, don't do as much park riding now, and then do focus on big air because I've got the King of the Air in January, February. So yeah, start thinking about that. So I'll have, like, you know, a lot of the winter doing some big air, and then it comes around back into the summer next year, and I'll get back into my freestyle and park. So
sick, man.
Always trying to mix it up and stay in touch with the other disciplines. Yeah. Keeps it fresh.
Sounds like
you. And even, you know, it's not just like the discipline. Even if I'm in, let's say I'm always riding, you know, my freestyle board and bindings, some days I want to just do some like jumps, and other days I want to unhook. And it's really like making the most of the conditions you have. If there's ramps and kickers, I'll be like having some fun, like kickers. Like, even last week I went out a couple of times and it wasn't that great, but there was like 1 foot ramps coming in all day, and I was just like trying some like little tech threes and stuff like that, you know. And then the next day it was actually some flat water, so I did a bit of freestyle. So I just try and mix it up and make the most of the conditions that I have on the day.
Yeah, man, sounds good. Sounds like you do a pretty good job. Cool, man. So what are like the top three places that you've kiteboarded or traveled to? Because you've been, you know, traveling for so many years now. Yeah. What would you say are the top three?
People always ask me this, and it's really hard to pick, but just for purely kite surfing, it's a bit easier to answer, because people are always like, where should I go? Because everywhere has its advantages, you know?
Yeah.
Like Brazil, you know, is really tough to beat if you want to.
Just go
do freestyle and be in a lagoon every day. But also for me, I get a bit stir crazy there because there's nothing there, you know. Like after 2 weeks, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm in the middle of a desert. I've been kiting for 6 hours every day. Everything hurts. And I just like want to be cold and on my sofa again, you know. But other people can be there for months, and I just go a little bit stir crazy. And then, yeah, so Brazil's definitely one. Australia is one of my favorite places. Like the west side, Perth's really, really good. Lots of consistent wind, but again, like quite freestyle orientated. Cape Town, you know, it's really tough to beat. A bit more like conditions I have at home, which is, you know, strong wind, a bit colder water, but I like that punchy strong wind for just doing some big jumps and stuff like that. And then, you know, the Caribbean's pretty amazing, really. I spent a bit of time in the Caribbean lately on the Wind Voyager boat, going to like the Grenadines, and they're actually going to be in Antigua a lot this summer.
Yeah, it sounds like they're kind of around for most of the season.
Yeah, so, and you know, Antigua was one of really, really cool place when I came. We were just chatting about when that was. I went for the Island Time video, probably 5 or 6 years ago.
Too long, man. It's crazy.
Yeah, so yeah, there's a lot of places on the list, you know. Like, I love going to Hood River as well, because it's actually the place where one of the only permanent kite parks all year round. It's pretty cool. You can just go out and shred whenever. And of course, Hatteras as well is really, really cool, because again, they got the Triple S. And also that whole, like, you know, the downwind scene there, where you see that video, like, jumping over like man gaps and stuff, like that's pretty unique as well. I think that's really unique to kiteboarding, to be able to, like, you know, just explore places where no one else can go. Like, no other vehicle could get there, you know, as well as we can on our kites. So, yeah, the list goes on, man.
Yeah, right. But that's pretty solid. Those are definitely, like, I think the pillars of, you know, most
And
of
also,
it.
Wait, my local boat.
almost forgot.
Yeah, wait, whoa. Hang on. Yeah, because that is on its day, you know, really good. It's just a little bit more fickle than some of those places. You know?
Yeah.
We have big tides and frontal winds.
Yeah, I remember the first time I came here, I was like, where's the water? Like, you know, you need to watch the wind and the water.
Yeah, exactly. Because our tides are like 5 or 6 meters here. So it's quite a lot. Like in Antigua, you have like half
nothing,
a meter.
Nothing, yeah. You don't even need to think about it.
Exactly. And when it does all come together here, like it's few and far between. But when it does, it's really special, you know, which is kind of like the magic of it, I think.
Cool, man.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
I actually wanted to touch on that little downwinder video you mentioned earlier, because that went like super duper viral on Facebook, right?
Yeah. Like 2 million and counting.
How did that happen? What's the secret, bruh? How did that like take off? Was it just a video you just uploaded and it kind of went itself, or?
Yeah, basically completely organic. I did one the year before. That was my second most viewed video that got like 700,000 or 800,000. Yeah, and I was like, thought that was viral, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that's pretty viral.
Yeah, for sure. It thousands of shares and stuff like that. So I was like, well, I was there for ages this time doing the movie and the Send It movie. Mm. I was there for like 6 weeks. And of course we had a day or two with like nuking wind. And the previous year I'd done the Planet Downwinder, which is a famous one near Real. Mm. And then there was another one that's further downwind from Real that I'd never done. Finally lined up with loads of wind and took my GoPro. Like, just had some fun with it and just, you know, I just tried to get as ballsy as I can, like just go for gaps where I probably wasn't going to make.
Yeah.
And the grass there is kind of soft. Like, if you get, when the tide's high and there's lots of wind, actually landing on the grass, like, isn't that bad. But when you're looking at the video, like, holy shit. Yeah. He's about to like land on the grass and die. But actually, even if you crash, it's not the end of the way. As long as you're good with the kite, you can still get it very wrong.
Yeah.
And there are some trees and stuff in there. So you do need to be a bit careful. But yeah, I kind of uploaded it. And then it was a little bit slow to start. Like, because the one from the year before, like, lit, like, went straight away. Like, in the first hour, it had 5,000 views.
Yeah.
Or 10,000, whatever. And then this one was kind of like, took a couple of days to get rolling. And then all of a sudden just went, I don't know if a few accounts shared it or what happened really, but it just like,
and then once it got in the system, that was it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's caught fire. Pretty sick,
cool,
man.
To see. Yeah, yeah.
So it just goes to show, you know, all you need is a GoPro, Facebook exactly. account, some internet, and you could like create a pretty fucking viral video.
Yeah, that's just, all it is just, you know, a GoPro in my mouth. Like, it's very,
not complicated. Yeah,
exactly. And it's got more views than any other video that we put. Yeah, you know, lots of money.
All the effort into.
So, exactly. So.
And like, did that actually mean anything for you though? Like, as a pro rider, like, you get a Facebook video with 2 million views. Did that actually like count for that much?
Did it
lead to anything?
Not directly, but I still think that it does mean a lot. Like, you know, as a rider, one of the main things I do is produce content. It's basically my number one job. Like, day to day, I'm making videos, you know, sorting out photos for magazines, brands. Like, my main job is producing content. And like we were talking about earlier, like being able to quantify your worth, you know, at the end of the year in my portfolio.
Going to be insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I can, because, you know, maybe most of my other videos, whatever, get 30,000, 50,000, whatever,
how
many views.
Helps.
Yeah, and then you like have the 2 million in there, then you, I can say to Brand X, oh, my total view count for this year is 10 million views, you know, which is good. Like,
Like
it might not directly have, you know, an effect, but in the big picture,
it is worth something, in the big picture,
it's good. And also, yeah, a few brands have seen that and it starts a few conversations and stuff. So
cool, man.
Yeah.
Pretty sick.
Yeah, I'm stoked on it.
Yeah, so if you guys haven't checked it out, I'll probably link it down below this so you can guys go have a look
just
at it.
Right here. Click here.
So yeah, man. So, you know, you're obviously a pro kiteboarder, so a big part of your life is kiting a lot. But what is your life like outside of kiteboarding? What are you into when you're not shredding, not thinking about kiting? Are you like, you know, anything that you're into when you're not on the water?
Yeah, loads of stuff, actually. Like, I've got a little sailing boat. I love sailing in, actually. We should go out on it this week sometime. Yeah. I've got a little sailing boat, so that's fun in the summer. I've always been like a bit of a homebody. Like, I always like coming home in between trips. Got a girlfriend and a cat and a pad and stuff. So it's nice to come home. Like, the more I've traveled, you know, for such a long time, I kind of try and keep my trip short and sweet. I find I'm most productive if I just get in, get what I'm doing, and then get out, you know, come home. And once I'm home, I can get on top of things, you know, organize all the content, get it out. Because when you're on the road all the time, it's tricky.
So hard, yeah.
It's tricky to stay on top of everything. And even just like, you know, having a good internet connection makes it easier to send content out and things like that. So, I like coming home. And the last couple of years, you know, I'm quite into like my fitness and stuff. So I do a bit of yoga.
Yeah, so you were actually training to be like personal trainer?
Yeah, I just started the last 6 months, actually.
That's pretty serious.
Yeah, I know, man. Like, weirdly, it kind of just happened, you know, naturally. It was a bit of a spur of the moment decision to take it on. But I basically had an ankle operation like 3 years ago. I had an arthroscopy, and before that I'd never done anything, never set foot in a gym, just never stretched, like scoffed at any type of fitness whatever, you know. I just was that guy that just didn't do anything. And it did eventually catch up with me, you know. And with my ankle operation, I learned that if you do want to keep riding forever, then you got to look after yourself.
True that,
and doing the physio and the rehab for that made me realize how, like, you know, bad a shape my body in, not particularly like fitness, but just so it was so specialized. You know, like I spend all my day pulling on a kite, and I can do 30 pull-ups, but I can barely do, you know, 20 push-ups or something. You know, so I kind of realized, I was like, wow, I need to, like, you know, balance out a little bit more. So I started, you know, doing a bit of training, PTs and stuff, and then I kind of, you know, was like, I quite enjoy it. I also quite enjoy helping other people, so I was like, why not, you know. And also loads of the trainers I worked with were like plonkers, so I was like, I could do this better myself, you know. And I actually really find, like, you know, health and fitness really interesting.
Yeah.
You know, I started taking way more interest in, you know, what I eat and looking after myself, just because, you know, it is like it's nice to think of your body as a car, you know. Everyone likes driving around in a nice car.
True that.
You know? So you might as well look after it, because you've only got one.
Yeah, so, can't go and trade it in.
Yeah, exactly. And the knowledge that I've learned is you can keep it forever, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm not planning to be a full-time PT, but even the stuff I've learned.
Yeah,
you know,
it makes
recently,
sense. You know, even just for you, just for your personal,
yeah,
you know, taking care of yourself.
Just like at a competition, knowing about your energy systems and stuff, like how to prepare yourself, like little things like that help. And I've been getting banged into my yoga lately, like, which is funny, because I was always that guy that would just take the piss out of yoga. Like, I'd be that guy to be like, what are you doing yoga? And now I go like every day.
Oh, it's funny, yeah.
I'm all about it, you know.
Oh, mindset and knowledge, that just changes everything. Just knowing,
yeah, it's,
you know,
weird
the benefits.
How you can change. But yeah, I'm just like super stiff, you know. And also, it's partly to do with progressing my riding. Like, I found that I was at a point with my riding where, like, I had, you know, 4 or 5 grabs were my go-to grabs, and I wanted to do more seatbelts or nucleus, and I can never reach it. Like, and it annoyed me. So I was like, to further my riding, to keep me
gotta
stoked,
get that yoga in.
I got to do some yoga so I can stretch down and actually
make those grabs. What stretch do you do to help with that grab? Is there a specific?
It's not just one stretch.
It's just overall, yeah.
Yeah, it's just overall. Like, it's definitely like kiting and stuff makes like your back and legs super tight.
Yeah.
So
hip,
I've
hip
never
flexes.
Been able to touch my toes until recently, you know. And even now, it's a stretch.
That's cool, man. Happy for you, though, man.
Yeah.
Man's growing up.
You know, getting after it.
Sick, man.
So, yeah, look after yourself, guys.
Do yoga, you know? Get on it. Don't make fun of it.
Exactly.
Cool, man. So, yeah, I think that pretty much rounds up the interview. You know, if there's anything you want to say or shout out, you can kind of just let people know where they can find you, you know, Instagram, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, actually, I've been watching your vlogs, man. I've been thinking about jumping on the bandwagon myself.
Yeah,
you know?
Going to get on
so
the vlog train.
Check out the YouTube account right here. Jake's going to put a link to it. Hit it up, hit subscribe. And yeah, man, that's about it, really. I really want to come back with this quote. I know I've written it down. It's so annoying because it's such a good quote. It's like...
Here's what we'll do. If he finds it, I'll put it on the screen if it's like super sick, but you know.
Oh, no, it is. No, we can't let this go until I've got it.
Oh, man. What's the quote then, brah?
Life is 10% luck and 90% how you react to it.
Ooh.
It's pretty heavy, but it makes sense, you know.
Okay, guys, so that's it for today's episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. It was super cool to kind of sit down with Sam and just dive into a bit more of his story. I definitely picked up on a few gems. Hopefully you guys did as well. If you did, make sure you share the podcast with a friend, because this content's still pretty new. A lot of kiteboarders, I feel like, have no idea this even exists. So yeah, if you really enjoyed it, share with a friend. If you super duper crazy enjoyed it, come and hail us up on Instagram at samlight1 and at Jake Kelsick. We would love to hear from you guys. We love to get some feedback from people who actually take the time to consume the content. And that's pretty much it, guys. Hopefully you guys have an awesome day, and I'll see you guys soon in another episode of the Basics Podcast. Peace, love, and big ups.